show.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at Eric at On Air Brands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most happy and humbled host, as usual, Eric Cabral. And today, like many days, I'm truly blessed to be in the room, or in this case, the virtual room, with a friend and a colleague, and I'd say a mentor, Mr. Jerry McNamara. Welcome to the show, brother.
Eric, thank you so much for having me, and what an honor to use the word mentor, because I feel the same about you. And I think it's one of those great things in life when both people feel so lucky to be in a relationship with each other. And that is exactly the way I feel about you. You have one of the best energies that you give into the world, and thank you for having me.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for being here, and thank you for being a friend. And we're going to uncover, man, some cool stuff. I'm excited to learn from you and share with the audience potentially things that they can learn and implement in their life or in their business. So before we get into the first question, being the eureka moment, I do want to highlight something that I love and noticed about you, in that I'm a big branding guy. And I've noticed that you pay attention to brand. And you love to brand your glasses with a certain name. You don't go by Sterling or you don't go by Gucci. You buy your brand of glasses, which is, just share with the audience what you take pride in.
It is the Jerry Mac brand. And when I needed to get some new glasses, my sister happened to be visiting here in Jacksonville. And she said, hey, I just found this brand new eyeglass place where you can take your prescription online and order glasses. And it was Zini Optical. And as I was checking out, the glasses were so inexpensive, Eric, that one of the options was to put something on the side of the glasses. So I said, what the heck? I'm going to put my name on the side of the glasses. I just think that'll be kind of fun. And if they don't work, it's not a big deal because the glasses cost $30 instead of $500. And 8 years later, here I am. I continue the Jerry Mac brand on my glasses.
I love it, dude. Yeah. You should maybe potentially franchise and sell that, because I'll buy some J Mac glasses. Like I think that's great, man. Like it stands out, you know, people talk about it, people recognize it, and it's unique, right? Which is all about, you know, aligns with branding. So let's get into it, brother. Let's talk about some of the things in your life and in your business, starting with the eureka moment. Time where you had to pivot, potentially make a big change in life. Share some moments with us.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I've always been obsessed with is the idea of success. And so I wrote my high school senior thesis on what is success. And as I looked at that, like 50% of America, I grew up in a broken home. And I looked at all of the people who helped me through a difficult time in my life. And I say this all the time, I stand on the shoulders of giants, and I wouldn't be here if people didn't love me when I couldn't love myself and open their home to me and just loved me in ways that just were incredible. And so it really taught me that whole notion of when Rachel and I got married, one of the vows that we said, because we wrote our own vows, was there will always be room for one more at the table. And so this whole notion of service and that we're in this together and we're always better together was something that was an indelible mark for me as a young person to realize, you know, I hate when people say, oh, that's he's a self-made man. I don't believe in the idea of a self-made man. And so for me, it's all about how do I make sure that I'm leaving the world a better place? I think that's part of the social compact. And how am I making sure that my interaction with Eric today and all of the people who are going to listen to this leave them in better places? And so when that becomes a driving part of your own value system and the impact that you want to make in the world, it changes the dynamic of your approach. And so for me, that is the one of the many places where I've had that moment of like, huh, interesting. I just want to leave the world a better place. And how do I do that? And I had so many people who mentored me and helped me along the way to get me to this spot.
Mm. Now, I know you to be that person, right? You shared some bits there that I'd like to sort of explore. And that is, you said, you know, you when you were in high school, you wrote this thesis and you started to eventually try to stand on the shoulders of giants. But then you also talked about, you know, coming from a broken home, which I relate to very much. Mm-hmm. I'll make some assumptions here, Jerry. That type of environment doesn't foster growth and accountability and all the things that we know to be successful in life or in business. What were some of the things that you had to start to recognize and put into place, you know, to kind of reinvent yourself or upgrade your operating system? And just give it the, sort of the time frame, like over those moments. Yeah.
So I always come back to, and I share this freely, the very best piece of advice I ever got in my life was from my brother. And my brother enjoyed partying more than he liked to go to college. And so he made it through about three semesters before my parents said, okay, enough is enough, and sent him to the Navy. So my brother and I grew up and we shared a room. And as he left for boot camp, at about 5:30 that morning, he looked at me and he said, learn from my mistakes. I made them for you. And I just thought to myself, huh, really interesting, because people always say, learn from your mistakes. And it was at that moment, that epiphany, where I just thought, I don't have to make the mistakes. I just have to be highly self-aware. I have to scan the landscape of the universe for all of these lessons. So I would say yes to this, no to that, yes to this, no to that. And that led me to a place of, well, geez, how can I learn from the smartest people in the world? And so one of the things that I started doing, and just by timeline and context, I was in about sixth grade. So I was about 12 or 13 years old. And I started reading quotes. And I just thought, man, I get to learn from the brightest minds throughout history and what their best ideas were. And that has just continued to carry me through life, to look and say, what is it that I can learn in this situation? How do I implement it into my life? Because I have a responsibility for my life to live in a way that unlocks this whole notion of success. And so that's really kind of that epiphany of accountability and ownership, where at 12 years old, I was thinking, well, it starts with me. And, you know, I have to be really mindful of that. And I recognize that, you know, I probably was wise beyond my years, Eric. And that was the nature of growing up in a broken home with addiction. And I look back and say, I would never wish the experience that I had coming through, you know, really formative years would have happened. But boy, am I glad that it happened to me, because it made me the person I am today.
Mm. Amazing, dude. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'm
I'm a bit envious that you realized and had that self-awareness so young, and to be able to kind of put yourself in a bubble, you know, in a way to protect yourself from maybe the outer forces that might be negatively influencing or trying to impact your life. So fast forward a bit, you're going through school, and when did you realize at some point what you wanted to do? Because typically around that age, 12, you know, not many self-aware kids, right? And but people still come up to all the adults at the barbecue. What are you going to do when you get out of high school? I mean, did you know what you were going to do? And what did you pursue coming out?
So I always thought, well, first of all, I thought I was going to be president of the United States. And so that was always in my mind.
Not too late.
Then I realized that everyone knows your underwear size, and you know, when you go have a, you know, maybe too many beverages and make a bad decision, everyone knows about it. And so that's not necessarily the life that that I want to lead. I think there's so many other ways to contribute. But beyond that, what I really wanted to become, Eric, was a teacher. And so I always, you know, went to school thinking that I was going to become a teacher. And then what I realized was that the world did not value learning in the same way that I valued teaching. And there just wasn't a lot of money in it. And so I pivoted and said, well, wouldn't it be better to apply those skills into helping businesses run better? Because that's really what leaders do inside of a business. They are great coaches. They are great leaders. They are great communicators. All the things that really great teachers do really, really well. And so my whole career has been spent teaching people and lifting people up to get the best out of them. And so I just applied my teaching into business, and that was a better decision for me.
Mm. Yeah. So when you started to cut your teeth on this, and given a little background and history of what I know of you, can you share, I mean, you got into sort of the franchising business, right? And not mm-hmm. as a franchisee, but as someone sort of on the upper rungs to help others. Like, is this where you started to like get your MBA throughout life experience?
I have always said that my first experience in business helping run a franchise company was getting your teeth bashed in better than an MBA. And, you know, that was a business. I was lucky to be in the right place at the right time. I am a very humble and hungry person. Man, I've just been so lucky to be in the right place at the right time. And so my high school soccer coach, who was a incredibly award-winning, I think he had ended up with 8 state titles and nearly 700 wins, very successful soccer coach. He would recruit all the best soccer players to come over and help him run his soccer company. And so that's how I got involved with Soccer Post. And again, right place, right time. We were rolling it out, and we went from 5.9 million to 15 million in 18 months. And I started to learn all of these things where I was in way in over my head. I mean, admittedly so. I would be sitting with, you know, the head of Adidas soccer, the head of Nike soccer, and thinking to myself, how am I even sitting here? Like, pinch me. So really fun experiences, but not lost on me that, you know, I was in over my head. So I was really willing to work really, really hard to try and level up my skills. And that's the place where I just thought, man, there is so much opportunity in this world. And this is, you know, no disrespect to the people who were at the head of those organizations. But as I got to work with them, I thought to myself, wow, I really like my chances to succeed in life. Because if this is the best person that can be at the top of Adidas soccer or Nike soccer, who at the time were at the top of the game, I really like that I'm going to have an opportunity to be successful if I work really hard and serve people really, really well. And so, yes, that was where I got my teeth bashed in a lot and learned a whole lot through that process. I think the one thing that I fell in love with during that time was high growth environments. And so when you're running a business that is scaling like that, the way I try and explain it to people is every day I walked in and I'd wrap my lips around the fire hydrant and someone would throw it on full blast and they'd say, hey, Jerry, don't miss a drop. And the reality of it is you're going to miss a lot of drops. You just try and make sure that you miss the right drops, not the ones that are really important to the business. And so that's when I fell in love with high growth companies. I just love the whole notion of the business of business and staying focused in on how do we serve our people in a way that unlocks that fertile ground for empowerment, decision-making, autonomy. And when you can do those things, I think you unlock something special inside of a business.
Mm. Yeah. Can you talk about some of those early days when you're in there? Like who were you working closely with? Were they taking sort of a mentorship role? Were you aware that you were learning and getting an MBA in real life situations? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In real time, I knew what was happening and we used to joke about it. And so, you know, my earliest mentors, Joe Felina, who was the high school soccer coach who had started the company, and Jerry Kellert, my earliest mentor. I was so lucky that they trusted in me and poured into me to put me in situations where they knew I'd be in over my head, but they also knew that I would continue to try and level up, you know, to win that game. And so, you know, as I think about like things that I'm grateful for, like Jerry Kellert would allow me to sit in on calls just to hear how calls happened at the highest level of organizations. And you want to talk about accelerating your growth forward? Like, I didn't know how to have those conversations. I didn't know what to ask for. I didn't know the tone of the conversation. And so as a young person, man, it was so fun. We were running out this fast-growing organization that had made the franchise 500 a couple times. We were also raising venture capital. And I was sitting in the room with the venture capitalists. I was sitting in the room with the heads of, you know, brands that you would admire. And yeah, that was incredibly humbling. But when you talk about giving people access and opportunity to learn and grow, I had the best of the best. I think I also did a good job of leveling up to contribute. It's not like I just stayed to be on a fly on the wall and didn't do very much. But without their trust in me and the opportunity to sit in the room, I'm probably not here today, Eric.
Mm. So while you were in that environment, you know, like you said, a high growth environment, a lot of encouragement in terms of helping you to grow and experience things and allowing you to make mistakes. I think that's huge in a business. We run our company the same way where we see it coming, you know, like somebody on our staff is eventually going to screw up. And rather than jumping in front of it, like a parent would want to, right? And then like letting them learn from that lesson and getting the scars, we just let it happen. So I'm curious if that happened to you. What were there some of the situations that you were in where you're like, oh crap, I screwed that up. Am I going to get fired? Or things like that, where also I wanted to know, like while you were coming up there, like what were your superpowers? What were you known for? Like, oh, Jerry's the guy, go to him for this.
Mm. So I will tell you that no one has failed more in their life than I have. And I say that proudly, right? And not in the scope of like, oh man, woe is me, but it's indicative because I'm trying shit that most people won't try. And I'm willing to make bigger bets on fewer things, which lead to less wiggle room. And I'm okay with that. I make conscious, intentional decisions to double down and say, this is the right path. And generally over the course of my career, it's worked out really, really well. I know some people like to preserve optionality. I am okay with picking a path and doubling down on it. I think that's what has unlocked a lot of success for me, is it's not willy-nilly. It's really focused, disciplined effort that's done consistently that unlocks all of the goodies at the end of the trail. I think the biggest mistake that I made during that process, Eric, was I didn't have a governor on myself. Mm. And so when I think about entrepreneurs, when I think about senior leaders, we think we can sprint, 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 sprint forever. And the reality of it is we can't. And so here I was at 26 and I was regularly working 100 hours a week because we were scaling, we were raising venture capital. three different times. We had a $5 million check sitting in the middle of a table. We turned it down every single time. And on Valentine's Day, I thought I was having a heart attack. And so, you know, there I am on a gurney and I have all these electrodes hooked up to me and I'm literally counting the dots in the industrial ceiling tiles. And I'm thinking to myself, at what cost has this come? All of this fun, all of this success, all of this outward things that you would look at has come at an extreme cost, which was my health. Because the reality of it is, you can't help anyone. You can't run a business from a gurney when you feel like you're having a heart attack. And so my biggest failure was one of the responsibility to myself, to take care of myself, to stay centered and balanced, because again, you can't run a business. You can't help anyone. You can't answer any questions when you're laying on a bed.
Wow. That's nuts, man. So at 26 years old, you felt like you were having a heart attack. You were getting treatment. What were some of the things that you, I mean, what was like the normal routine? You said 10, 20. I mean, you were working really hard. Were you just ignoring your health and your rest and your, like, what were some of the recipes for disaster there?
Yeah. So a couple things. One is, you know, we were traveling a lot to get to lots of meetings. Our stores were in 13 states, so I was traveling a lot for that. And, you know, as I've explained to people before, when you're running a high growth company and you're also considering investment capital, those are two discrete functions. When you're writing business plans and you're updating Excel pro formas and, you know, the VCs want to see this run rate, they want to see this. What happens if they do this? That's a job in and of itself. And then when you layer on top of it, you know, hey, there are demands in the day-to-day of the business. It's a recipe for disaster. And so it was not atypical for me to sleep on the couch outside of my office. People would say, did you really send me an email at 3 o'clock in the morning? It's like, yeah, it was a tough day. And the 26-year-old me, who loved being at the center of attention, who loved the ego of all roads came through me, I was the bottleneck of the business. I created my own stress. I created my own problems in that business. And it was a great lesson. David Bloom, who was one of the venture capitalists who came in to really look at the business, and he pulled me into a side room. He said, Jerry, I have to talk to you. I've been doing my due diligence here. And every time I ask someone a question, whether it's at a store location or corporate staff, everyone says, oh, you have to ask Jerry that. And he said, how are you going to feel when you're not where everything goes through? And quite honestly, I looked at him, I said, it'll be a great relief, David. Because my goal was that I would be driving down the road one day. Hopefully I would have kids. I didn't have kids at this time. And I'd be able to point off into the distance and say, see that company? Dad helped build that company. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I'm interested in. And that was the lesson that I had learned through that process, that ego is always the enemy. Ryan Holiday's book is a great, you know, tool, but ego is always the enemy. And so when you put yourself inside every decision, that was the leadership tax that I paid, as opposed to empowering people, being autonomous in their decision-making, giving them the rules of the game. When you centralize all of that, it's a recipe for disaster and you can't scale.
Powerful, dude. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I was about to ask, like, what was the landscape of your sort of family dynamics at the time? Because I know you got married.
Single and lonely. Single and lonely,
which is usually
you'll love this because this is funny. I tell my wife, I went about 4 years without kissing a woman. And Rachel's like, there's no way that's possible. I said, that's not something you brag about. That's not something you brag about.
We're just to highlight, it's your adulthood. You're an adult. You weren't a child.
I was an adult. Absolutely. And I was working so hard, Eric. Yeah. And it was the reason that I got my first cell phone was because, you know, you couldn't make plans. I'd make plans with, you know, Dave McGonigal. I'll meet you up at PJ's. Suddenly I'm headed to a store because, you know, there's an issue. Or, hey, you got to be in New York City for a VC meeting. And it was like, I missed so many, and this is, you know, rolling back 25 years. I missed so many opportunities to go out with friends or plans that I had with friends simply because my schedule was so hectic. And at the end of the day, people stopped asking me to go out. And rightfully so, I wouldn't have asked me to go out. And that's why I was like, I need to get one of these new cell phones so I can call people and let them know that I am not going to show up.
I think I remember the time. You're talking about the clamshell flip phones, right? Like, I need one of these. Is that what you're talking about?
This thing was like a brick.
Oh, the bricks.
The brick. And just the earpiece would slide up. But you would put it in your pocket, and it looked like you had a giant brick in your pocket. And so, yeah, so
you never had a beeper. That was the thing. It was the beeper, and then the cell phones.
Never went down the road of the beeper.
Yeah, I was the opposite of you. I was too busy focusing on women and partying in Manhattan, living the dream, working in Manhattan, and it was just too much. It was way too much. I rather would have been probably doing or should have been doing what you were doing, and learning and cutting my teeth on business and like all the lessons that you were learning. I think, do you have any regrets at all?
No.
But choosing that life?
No, I don't believe in that. You know, our path is our path. Just like I would say to you, like, own your own experience because it's brought us to exactly who and what we are today. And so, generally speaking, I really like myself. I like my approach. I love the people that I have in my life. I'm so grateful for them. And so I don't think looking back that regret actually serves you. Like, it may inform some of your future actions, but it doesn't actually serve you. And so I tell this to all my CEOs, if your thoughts, your feelings, or your actions don't serve you, then change them because you're the only one that can.
Yeah. Yeah. We have full control. You're right, man.
That's right.
People seem to play victim much of the time. And you're like, you have control. Just make the choice and understand that. So yeah, let's...
I say this all the time. Sorry to interrupt you, right? My mom used to say to me, smile and the world smiles with you, cry and cry alone, right? And so in my framework, I have turned that to, you can't always control your circumstances, but you can always control your attitude and your approach. And this whole notion that we give control of our time or our attitude into the world, as opposed to recognizing that it's a choice, then boy, you're in for a long life. You're in for a life where you're going to blow like a leaf in the wind and you're not going to get what you want. And you're going to wonder why it's happening to you, not for you, and how you can use those experiences to go forward and make the impact that you want in the world.
Yeah. I love it. I love it, brother. So many places to go here in so little time. But I have noticed you much, much more of late in the content creation game, right? It's clearly you're pouring in. You're building your community. You're pouring into them. Let's talk about some of the strategies now. And I know you said to me, and if there isn't any regret that JMac has, it's not doing this sooner, you said to me.
Yep.
So yeah, talk about what you're doing because I'm really appreciating all that you're putting out there.
Thanks. And I mean, you're such a great model in all of this. Thanks, I mean, to the community, sharing your gifts, your experiences. And so thank you for that. You know, for me, Eric, I'm on a mission to positively impact 5 million people in the next 5 years. And so I think that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what the universe tells me I'm supposed to do in the second half of my career is how do you continue to pour into people and show them how to run better businesses? Because I've never met anyone who shows up and says, you know what, I really want to suck at work today. And yet there are so many people that are ineffective due to poor leadership. And so for me, if I can make the world a better place, because I believe in whole people, you can't make this distinction of like, oh, it's just a business decision. Business decisions impact people. and therefore it's always personal. And I can't separate your home life from your work life. Because if you're not good at home, you can't be great at work. And if you're not good at work, you can't be great at home. And so we recognize people as whole people, and we embrace that instead of shunning that responsibility to just say, oh, it's a business decision. And so for me, when I look at the opportunity to, you know, you have on-air brands, to become a media company and to share with the world the lessons that I've learned, and to bring really smart people like you onto the show and say, Eric, teach my people, how do we get to better places? And I just celebrated 6 months of doing the show, which has been amazing. And one of the things that I shared with the audience last week when I spoke about that is, imagine your growth if once a week for an hour, you found the smartest person that you could find and learn from them. What would that look like for you as a person and as a growth engine to get you to the places where you want to go? Because I say this all the time. If I want to positively impact 5 million people over the next 5 years, I have to level up my skills. My skills do not match my ambition. And I'm going to be the one to raise my hand first and say, I'm working so hard. You can't see it, but I've got about 100 books over here, and I'm probably reading 84 of them right now. That's just the nature of being a high learner. But the gift that you get about content creation, and we do it a little bit differently. So, you know, this show is recorded. I do my show live every Thursday at 3:30 Eastern time, which simply means you have to show up at the same time, because on average, 12 to 24 people are showing up to the shows because they want to learn. They want to be able to ask questions live and say, Eric, tell me about this. And that to me is a great forcing function. There is no, I'm going to push that off. No, there's people that are coming. And so that has been our approach in building the show. It has been so much fun. And I have a lot of lessons learned, but I just wanted to answer the first question first.
Yeah, please share some of the lessons that you've learned over the past, six, 7 months.
So I think one of them is it's an extraordinary opportunity to connect with people. I mean, the emails, the text messages. I got a text message from one of my friends. I didn't know he had ever listened to one of the shows. And he had sent me a message and said, hey, man, I love the hiring show that you did. I have 3 questions. Can you hop on a call with me? And I thought to myself, that's amazing. I had no idea that he was actually watching the show. They said, no, I watch every show. I just watch it on Facebook, so you can't see me. And that's the opportunity to connect. The opportunities to people invite you. I just got invited to speak at a corporate event. That would have never happened if I wasn't showing up regularly, using micro content to connect and pick the best clips out and putting them onto LinkedIn and Facebook and other social platforms. Those pieces have been amazing. Like, that's the output of the connection. And, you know, as I started this journey, I really thought, I'm not going to look at metrics for 9 months. And as a data-driven guy, most people be like, that's not like Jerry. But I believe that this is a long-term branding play that takes a long time to get moving and to get the flywheel going. And so I would tell people, if you're looking for a quick hitting strategy, this is not your game. But if you are looking to build something that becomes a content machine and connection with people and communities, then I don't know that there's any other thing that you should be doing in your marketing playbook right now than building your brand through a podcast or a live show. It has been extraordinary so far. The other thing that I would share is I'm grateful for, you know, people like you, On Air Brands. I work with Be The Stage, but there are companies that will help you do all of the production behind the scenes. Listen, I've figured out some really hard business challenges in my life, and I could have figured this one out, but I would have had my teeth bashed in, and I can absolutely understand why most people only get to like 7 to 10 episodes. Because if you're trying to do it all by yourself, you're going to get absolutely worn out doing it. And so I would tell you, go find a team to help you do it. I say the same thing to all my high achievers. I call it the high achiever trap. It all has to get done. You don't have to do all the doing. You have to resource the doing. And I would tell you, it's the greatest resource that I've used to bring into my business other than my assistant, Maria.
Yeah, it's so true. I think people get it. But then those that don't get it are probably people that want to build and maybe have the time, energy, resources to do it. But we all know the cliche saying success leaves clues or a blueprint. You know, there's a blueprint there. Do you want to build from that blueprint on your own, or do you want to leverage, you know, the architects, the builders, the contractors, the sheetrockers, all the guys that are already, it's already done. Like, yeah,
that's right.
But it's good, man. Oh, I appreciate what you're doing. And it allows you to be creative, right? Versus very tactical, because it yes. becomes administrative. It becomes very tactical and you get bogged down with the details of what platform am I going to use and what camera. Blah, blah, blah. It's like you concentrate on content. That's right. The key. You're the subject matter expert, the SMO. So let's thank you for that. Thank you for sharing. I love building community, especially through a live podcast like that. It's a wonderful strategy, and I'm looking forward to more from you and what you're doing. Definitely, if you're listening to this, I highly recommend you check out Jerry's show, The Best Places to Lead. But before, I'm not winding the show down, Jerry. You're not going anywhere. Let's just wanted to give you a little plug there.
Good, because I got a lot more to say.
Yeah, please. Okay, awesome. I hope you have some time because we're going to go over time a little bit. So we're going to get to our segment here called Embracing the F Word, meaning failure. Now, you shared some already. But do you have any other nuggets that you could share in terms of you falling on your face and us learning from it?
You know, I think the most important thing for me, and again, because I've failed so many, I mean, I could pick a gazillion of these, Eric. I think it's the approach of your relationship with failure. And so I'll give you an example. My daughter goes to a Montessori school. And I was taking her in the back way because she had a dentist appointment. And on the back door, in these giant letters, it was fail. I was like, whoa, that is not very Montessori-like. And then as I got closer, it said, first attempt in learning. And that is the mindset that they instill in children in the Montessori school. It's okay that that didn't work. Now you know. What are you going to try next? Okay, that didn't work. What are you going to try next? And I think, you know, as I think back to my traditional schooling and all the red that used to be all over my English paper and how I would feel when I would get that back, boy, it was like, ouch. But if we can get ourselves to a place that failure means I'm one step closer to success as opposed to a stopping point, it's the greatest gift that you can give yourself. And so your relationship with failure, you should embrace it instead of trying to avoid it. And as I said before, the reason that I have failed more than anyone else is because I'm willing to try stuff that people are not willing to try. It's like, okay, I have this crazy idea about these automations of bringing content and social media profiles and enhancing the data to try and reach this sub-segment of the audience. People go like, I would have never put that together. How did you even think about like trying to put all of these things? That's the gift the universe gave me, is to be able to connect dots in very unique ways to produce business outcomes. And has it always worked out? Heck no. But has it also sometimes yielded really, really big results? Absolutely. And so I think the F word for me, it's embrace the mindset of it's not a stopping point. It's a reflection point on the journey on your way to success. And if you change that dynamic, I think you'll find more success in your life.
Love it, man. It's a healthy approach. Yeah. Something that, you know, most of us have to figure out. My I love that story with the fail and first attempt in learning. The big aha for me was, and I don't know if I shared this with you before, was I saw a quote, and maybe it was even a tattoo artist putting it on someone, which is a sign that if I ever get a tattoo, I don't have any ink. It would be this quote, which is failure is success in progress. And that's, totally. That changed my, that was like, boop, upgrade in the operating system.
It's so interesting. Like, let me just finish that thought.
Yeah, please.
Because I got asked this on another podcast maybe 2 years ago. And we were talking about imposter syndrome and fear of failure. And the host was sharing, like, those things were really real for him. And I said, Matt, you know what really scares me in life is being 75 in a hospital and knowing that I was dying and that I didn't try to pull off the epic shit that I had in my mind, that I didn't go to the plate and try and swing the bat. Because for me, I'd rather lose trying to win than not try at all, because you're still in the same place. You still lost and you have that self-doubt. What if? What could have been? I don't mind failing. I know maybe that for some people that's crazy, but the reason that I'm married to the hottest woman and the coolest girl that I know is because I'm the one that asked her out. And you know what? I never stopped texting her once she said, here's my number. And I don't know. It worked out pretty good.
Well, dude, she thought you owned a big optics company. She was like, oh, he's got his own. he's got his own glass guy. He's rich.
So true. So yeah, true. Yeah.
But so true. Your wife is off the scales. You definitely leveled up there, my brother, as we all mostly do. You see, yes. My wife, same thing. Like, how the heck did you get two Amen. Levels, three levels above? It's good.
Amen. Hey,
humor. And it's one thing. Oh, hey. So I want to jump into... sort of, and thanks for sharing the failure moments all throughout here. You had many, many lessons that we can, you know, pull from. But as we do wind down and land the bird, or attempt to land this bird, because I could talk to you all day, brother.
Amen.
Is I want to challenge you here in one word. How do you help people?
I think it's really clear for me. It's love. My first value is love your people and treat them as whole people. And what I found, Eric, is if you just put your ego aside and you love people, which means that you're in service to people, you're able to build relationships differently when you recognize them, not just as like, oh, this person has utility because they're a good friend, or they have utility because, you know, they're inside one of my businesses. It's like, no. How do I take a genuine interest in the people who are around me to leave them in better places than they were before I got there? And I think if you can just pour as much of yourself in love and in service to people, God, could you imagine that world? Could you imagine that people could just put aside these notions of that it has to be about me, and that we're creating, or, you know, all clamoring for a small piece of the pie instead of baking bigger pies? That whole growth mindset and abundant lifestyle, it just, I don't know. I just imagine a world that is a better place. And so I'm going to model that behavior and love the heck out of my people.
Oh, dude. You're pulling on my heartstrings, man. That's exactly a word that I would have chosen as well. Just love on people, man. And right.
It's so easy though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, I always come back to, so I was in college and I was a scholar. And so I was reading, as part of that, you had to read incoming scholar applications. And it was like, tell me about the world that you see in the future. And every single one of them, I think there were 112, because I actually counted the damn things. I want to see peace in the world. And I thought to myself, why is there not peace in the world? Right? Because if everyone wants peace in the world, then why do we not have peace? And it's that we get ourselves in the way. And we get apprehensive and we bring our baggage forward and the scars, and they may hurt me, all of those things. I think it's way more painful to live a lonely, soulless life because I don't put myself out there to be trusted, to be loved, to be all of those things that make the human connection amazing. And so I would tell your people, open yourself up, love your people, right? I would tell you, I've had great relationships with you and interactions. And I am unafraid to tell people, male or female, that when you get to that connection point of like, God, I just have such a level of respect and understanding and energy with Eric. Eric, man, I love you. And I have so appreciated our time together. And most people just live in that, oh my gosh, how is that going to be received on the other side? It's like, it doesn't matter. Because I'm putting it out there. I'm making it okay to say, you know what? Two people vibing, having a great time. That's what life is all about. I think that's the highest order of living.
Yeah. I love it, dude. It's powerful, man. I love you too, man. So it's powerful. And what I love about the word and what I love about the feeling and the emotion and the power of it is that it's the opposite of fear. It's the opposite of pain. It's the opposite of ego. It's just so many things that we need to move away from and move towards love. I love this label for myself, as well as I'll place this label on you too, is that we're hippie capitalists. Like, we want to grow business. We know money is necessary, but there's a better, healthier way to do it. And that's totally with love. And agreed, 100%. Thanks for putting that out there. I'm so glad you were the first person that I actually kicked off that segment with, because we used to end it with embrace the F word. I was like, it's kind of like a negative thing. Let's let's roll into something great. And you brought it home, man. Love. Yeah. I love it, dude. So good. So good. What's the best ways that people can reach you, brother?
So if you'd be interested in checking out the show, you can find the show at bestplacestolead.com. We catalog all the episodes and the upcoming episodes. We do that every Thursday at 3:30 Eastern time. Again, we do it as a live show. So you can come on, you can ask questions yourself, you can become part of the community. If you're interested in anything business, the name of my company is provenchaos.com. And I named my company that because most of the people that I work with are at high growth. And so they've proven there's a marketplace, but they're in chaos because their people, their systems, or their process have not kept pace. And they're in a little bit of a frantic state. So I help bring calm back to that. Those are the two best places to go find me.
So good. So good. And you are amazing, dude. Thank you so much for being with me on the show. And it's not enough time, man. I feel like we could do a whole series together. But yeah, it's great, man, to be in each other's world. And I appreciate you very much, man. Thank you.
Me too. Eric, thank you so much for having me.
Anytime.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.